Sorry about, I'm just starting to record it now, so I apologize. I will put notes on that ladder. Next up is approval of the minutes from November 17th, December 3rd, and December 8th. All of the voting members on the 17th.
Yeah.
The 3-1.
Ken, we cannot hear you.
Ken. Yeah.
Sure, I sit at the computer and no one can hear me. So, putting in for the approval of the minutes for the 17th of November, the 3rd of December, and the 8th of December. I'll update the vote count for the 17th for 3-1 and correct a typo further down for Turkey Trot. I don't think there were any other corrections.
I was not at the December 8th meeting, so if you just update that attendance.
Thank you. I get a motion to accept.
I so move, Andrea.
Thank you.
I will second, Darren.
Thank you. Yeah. Guess we'll move on to the head of school report. Oh, wait, sorry. Yes. Can we vote to approve the minutes as amended?
Aye.
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 Now the head of school report. Please and thank you. Should I speak loudly so people can hear me? Yeah, don't be shy. Pull closer to you. So, first update is about COVID updates. We have some COVID data that's coming through the beginning of December as well. What's important here for us to note is number one, the campus.
I'm sorry, we can't hear on Zoom.
Yeah, I don't know why we can't hear you.
We cannot hear anything.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Can you hear Ken?
Yes, we hear him when he yells.
The background noise? I unmuted myself. Is that better?
Yes, it's better, but it just has an echo.
Should I try it now? How's that?
That's better.
Better? Okay. Okay, so we're going to begin with the COVID update today. Campus totals, there are 128 total positive cases, 44 positive cases on the campus testing, 34 out of 44 confirmed on PCR. The COVID case total has risen since the last board meeting. At the last board meeting, there were 86 cases on the campus. As of Wednesday, December 8th, there are 128 cases. Of the total number of COVID cases since school began, about 33% of them have been in the last month. In the meantime, it's important to note that there are about 60 students who are participating in a new program that we have, and we will be talking about that shortly. I know that some people were asking about it, so I do want to do that. As a general precaution, please don't send children to school sick. There is a rise in illnesses on campus, and we are experiencing multiple cases of influenza, RSV, strep throat, and colds. So please keep your child home if they are ill. Students should not come to school if they have a fever in the last 24 hours. Quidel has remained pretty flexible with us and meeting our needs, and they're on campus every week, alternating between the buildings. We have joined the Test to Stay program. We are one of the authorized Test to Stay program schools. And we launched it on December the 6th over here. This program offers unvaccinated close contacts the ability for families to take the test each night and then attend school the next day. This program is operated by the state. Odyssey Nursing is responsible for identifying the participants, explaining the process, and reviewing the results submitted by families. Currently, there are more than 60 students that have been admitted into the program. And it is doing quite a decent job for us of keeping kids in school as they're able to test every day when they're close contacts. We're still encouraging vaccination. I know that we had our one vaccination clinic. We are working on having a second vaccination clinic after the break. We do have a second round of vaccinations coming. I believe it's tomorrow for the ones that took the first round 3 weeks ago. It's time for their second dose for the 5 to 11 group. We're looking again to have another vaccination clinic here hosted very, very soon. I did see that today on the Facebook page as well, and families are appreciative of having the opportunity, and hopefully we can get some more. We can partner up again with Albertsons and provide that service again. Staff at vaccinations and mandating is obviously, we have employed the attestation approach that is coupled with the monthly audits to safeguard the health of our employees and their families and students and visitors and the community at large. And so that is an attestation process that happens every month, and then the state audits it, and we have to report back on how many individuals are vaccinated every month. That's where we are with respect to COVID right now. I do have some updates later on that we'll talk about for the good of the school. We'll talk about that and discuss. So a little bit more to come in a little while. Again, thank you to Mr. Russos for taking the logistics of the brick project phase two on. We're evaluating a new brick vendor right now, and we're going to launch the project again in the next 4 to 6 weeks with the goal of raising another $50,000 for the school. And that'll ramp up very, very soon. The leadership committee is assisting with the creation of the OCS vendor file, which can be used to solicit the brick sponsors. While many of the vendors are being identified, we will need to run down contract details, which are currently lacking. Bleachers are on their way. They just need to be installed. We've already talked about that from the last meeting. And the scoreboard delivery is still not confirmed, but it should be here soon. They are digging the hole for the scoreboard and running the electricity. So that is coming very, very, very soon. Culture focus. Our school is proud to announce that we now have a culture coordinator. Her name is Ms. Audrey Bonet, and she's on this call with us today. Welcome, Ms. Bonet. Hi. And she has hit the ground running. She's currently distributing the staff surveys and the parent surveys. The parent surveys should be coming out tomorrow, and the staff surveys are already out. These surveys are because the organization is seeking feedback from all stakeholders, both in terms of school climate, safety, and all other aspects of the organization of the school. We are using a norm reference third party to do these, which is Panorama Education. They are a nationally normed organization that has a lot of schools for comparative purposes as well. So we look forward to looking through that data and seeing how we can improve our entire school community. She has also scheduled walkthroughs, included them for the lower school. She will be doing them for the others as well to observe how we embrace diversity and inclusion in all of our program. In another area, food services, and we've mentioned this in the past, is consistently churning out 1,200 to 1,400 meals per day, and we are looking to expand our kitchen and its growing needs. Our development team is looking for community members who would like to donate to the school as well, just so that you can understand some of the different needs of what we're trying to do. And in the last meeting, I talked to you a little bit about the holiday meals that we were able to serve as well. From a facilities perspective, the office's expansion and moving project is close to completion, with support personnel now centrally located in Building 22, upstairs in the fishbowl. This is going to allow for better collaboration and an ability to leverage our support and brainstorm together. IT is formatting Chromebooks for us right now, which includes a new shipment of 150 within the last month. The online library has been launched. Schoology rollovers have occurred. And we are also migrating to a new information system for blasting out information to stakeholders, and that is occurring right now as well. From a building level perspective, at the lower school, currently we are preparing for the winter concerts and gearing up for the building-wide Winter Olympics door decorating contest. That's going to happen right after break. Teacher walkthroughs are focused on inclusive practices, and teachers have created warm, inviting, and equitably accessible learning environments for their students. We're continuing to work on collecting, implementing, and posting trauma-informed practice resources around the building following up our first PD. The second PD on trauma-informed practices and restorative practices is coming up in February. In the intermediate school, we're getting into the holiday spirit over there as well. They're doing the door decorating in the intermediate school, and voting's taking place this week. Third grade has an in-house field trip this Thursday and Friday. Looking forward to the third grade holiday concerts as well. Heading into the winter break with our December school-wide bingo. Let's see which class is going to win that one. In the middle school, we have the penny wars going on. I've seen the big buckets for that. The eighth grade team is having the cookie dough fundraiser to raise money for the end of the year trip, the eighth grade formal and graduation. So please show them their support by buying some cookie dough. The middle school band has their winter concert on December 15th. We encourage all folks to attend that. I will definitely be in attendance as well. Middle school Greek culinary arts students, along with our business and technology students, will participate in the STEAM gingerbread workshop on December 22nd. And for our high school, let's see, we'll talk about that in a second. Let me talk a little bit about where our curriculum instruction and development team is right now. Kindergarten teachers have collectively assessed the effectiveness of the new kindergarten's math screener, iReady, and it will be purchased for January's use. The iReady kindergarten math screener purchased and the teachers were trained. Assessment scheduled to begin in January, like we said. Kindergarten teachers already have students practicing through their accounts as this is being set up. We have talked about some of the curriculum adaptments that we've made. As an update, teachers are exploring Amplify, which is a CKLA benchmark, advanced My2s into reading, and the American Reading Company, which is also referred to as ARC. The three-pronged approach being used includes delving into the hard copies of all the curriculum materials and resources, exploring digital resources, comparing and contrasting elements of the five reading curriculums, and reviewing the national normed ed reports on each one of them. And this is an ongoing focus. As I mentioned before, in terms of professional development, we are consistently going through more developments, professional development. Teachers are being sent out to see best practices in other schools as well. And like I said before, we have a February professional development for all staff coming up as well. Odyssey participates in these professional development initiatives like representatives from each school in the Accelerating to Grade Level Math Coaching Program. The first meeting was on December 10th. Staff will be informed of the next steps and how the coaches will build their capacity as a result of that. We also have another workshop coming up for leading early literacy series for elementary school teams. The first workshop is on December 17th. Okay, very good. Moving on here. For the high school, college applications continue to be sent out, and we are getting some positive news. We have about 125 colleges thus far that we've applied for. We've already seen some exciting news coming in with students hearing back with acceptances to Penn State, Main Campus, Baylor, Temple, Jefferson, and Pace. Our next majority student activity is the Masquerade Ball, which is going to be held on Friday, the 14th of January at the Claymont Ballroom. Tickets will be sold when we return from winter break, and we are looking forward to the semi-formal dance coming up. First semester finals will take place in January upon our return, Thursday the 13th and Friday the 14th. Students will take their finals in the morning on a special schedule and can leave after their finals each day if they have their own transportation, or stay until the end of the day and wait for the bus. We're currently enrolling students for our next trips that are coming up in 2023, including a Greece trip. The trip mirrors the trip taken back in 2019 and will be led by Ms. Inske. From a school choice perspective, we have some billboards up in New Castle County. Maybe you've driven by them. Take a look at them. They're pretty nice and exciting. We're in the process of the school choice window for this particular year. And we have record interest in our high school programs, which is very, very promising. We look forward to welcoming our largest ninth grade class yet. And we also have limited seats available for 10th grade students for the upcoming school year. The class of 2026, which is our current eighth graders, visited the high school in November. They participated in activities throughout the building and met all of the high school staff while meeting and interacting with current high school students. All involved said they had a great time and got a good window into what it is to be in high school. The next such step update will occur on January 21st. We'd like to recognize and thank our high school staff for their participation in planning, organization, and execution in all of the many events we've had in the fall so far, including homecoming, open house, rolling out the blue carpet, the academic fair, and of course the step up days. We could not be more grateful to have such an involved and helpful staff in trying to put all of these different cultural events together. We appreciate that. Our enrollment focus, we're currently working through models and projections for next year. We'll have more information available in late January once all those models and projections have been finalized based on some other meetings that we're having with regards to our next 6 month planning. We might have a calendar update for early January. We'll talk about that in a little while. DEI priorities, including the training for the staff regarding trauma-informed practices, effective language and nonverbal communication. Like I said before, level two of that is going to be happening in February. And as we mentioned before, the parent and student surveys are being conducted by Panorama Education, and they are being sent out right now, and we're looking for that. We're pricing out both a banner as well as the cost to add spotlights that will illuminate a very large OCS sign that will cover the entire surface over the front entrance of the lower school, the side that faces 141, and will be seen from 141 throughout the evening hours. That's going to be part of our larger strategic plan for marketing. Financial update, I think I'm going to leave that to Jeff to do. Transportation update, short term right now, we are pushing to purchase used buses ASAP. Or new ones in March or April. These buses will be Delaware specific and ready to run routes. We plan on taking over First Student Bus 5 permanently and not covering the route, which is what we're doing right now, as soon as we have a driver and another bus available for that. The estimated time on that is somewhere between January and March. We're hoping to purchase a couple used buses in January, and possibly a new one in March. Currently, there are zero Delaware-specific buses available, new or used. However, we are consistently looking at that. New bus wait times are currently running about 180 to 300 days. We're looking at used options that have most of the Delaware specs that we could retrofit in a timely manner as an alternative, but we'll also propose to purchase new bus orders for the next academic year as well. Our short-term survey, after the school bus stops ended on the 12th of December, we're gonna start new activity runs with an added stop at Tally Day Park after the holiday break. This is in response to folks wanting us to add a stop in the North Wilmington section. The long-term goal here is to have two activity runs next year, one that serves Northern Wilmington and one that serves down in Newark and Bear and the top of Middletown. This is also in response to a shift in the demographics of our students, and we have more students that are coming from the Bear area as well, and so we need to add a little bit more activity buses going in that direction. For student services, we're preparing for the state WIDA testing in January and February, and we're working on more inclusive models with push and support services to support our students. The problem-solving team in each school is meeting to identify students who have not responded to best practices and interventions. A team member is assigned to a case and works through a problem-solving process to identify and implement specific intervention strategies based on the data supports that we have for the students. We're working to get the SEL program zones of regulation up and running with the support of the OTs consultation to better support our K-2 students with social-emotional regulation. This has come up as a priority as we start to welcome kids back to full live in-person instruction consistently. The hope is to identify a common language about emotions and social emotional learning to support consistently throughout the school. We're working on training related to the best research-based practices to support all learners and differentiated instruction accommodations being implemented with universally designed instruction. First parent council for students with disabilities is December 20th. Parents with students who receive services through an IEP, please be on the lookout for a flyer with more information. This session will focus on meeting the director, the mission for the special education moving forward, and how to navigate through special education at OCS. As I mentioned before, IT is upgrading the Blackboard Connect to Blackboard Mass Notification. which is an easier and more robust version to help us improve the school communications. We are still waiting on Chromebooks that are backordered, and we're also waiting on some laptops, Surface Pros, that are backordered as well. Once we get those, we'll have them formatted. Next item for us up over here is there, and this has already been submitted to the board, there's several trips that are going on out of state travel. There's a Greece tour happening through EF Tours in April of 2021. Although we believe that this may have been approved at some point in 2019 because it was a postponed trip like 2 or 3 times, we're just putting it on the agenda to make sure that it's approved and covered either way. Australia and New Zealand tours are in June of 2021 as well through EF Tours. There are some training tours that are happening internationally, potentially in Spain, but dependent on COVID protocols, this could change. This will occur over a long weekend and enables the staff leading the EF tours to be better prepared to execute the tour. The middle school, they have the Brandywine River Museum on December 17th. Longwood Gardens is coming up on January 5th. Dorney Park is at the end of the year, at the end of May. Lincoln Financial Field for the entire sixth grade. The Philadelphia Zoo for the sixth grade. And then we have the Constitution Center for the seventh grade. Intermediate school upcoming out-of-state field trips include the fourth grade Philadelphia field trip in May and the fifth grade Washington, D.C. Smithsonian Museum, which is tentatively scheduled for June 2nd. I believe the board has already received all of those dates, and they'll probably talk about that in a little while. The fundraising committee met on December 13th today, just a couple of hours ago. Included status and recommendations for restarting the OCS capital campaign. Once the funding priorities are set, the execution strategies can be targeted and executed. The capital campaign collateral, as developed by the PTI, is currently hosted on a website of this vendor's development and linked to ours. We have a meeting set up to review, getting control and updates to the materials. There may also be other resources currently held by this firm, including a large major gifts prospect file that we're looking at. MarCom projects include an effort to increase choice enrollment with mailings targeted to families of both high school and kindergarten children. These mailings are targeted to be in homes between Christmas and New Year's. The social media campaigns will also be conducted to support the choice enrollment campaign. Two supporting billboards are in place that we talked about through the end of January as well. And that pretty much concludes everything that I have for the December summary. I want to say just over 30,000.
What is special about the Delaware bus specs? Like if we found a bus from Pennsylvania, what would we have to do to make it acceptable?
That is way above my pay grade.
It'd just be good to, what's that?
So to spec a Pennsylvania bus for use in Delaware is about $15,000 to $20,000 in upgrades.
Regardless of where we source it from?
Correct. Delaware has very specific rules regarding seat foam and distance between seats. And then I was talking with Devin about it.
Yeah.
Because he was talking about getting used buses from, you know, wherever.
Right.
And it's about $15,000 to $20,000 if you get a good used bus.
Yeah. And more if it's not a good used bus.
Exactly. That's just the child safety things. That's not the transmission or anything. It's just safety inside the compartment for the kids.
And there are no other I'm just thinking, like, it might be cheaper to ship a bus if there's a state that's not close to us. Like, I just don't know if we've looked at that, of if Tennessee, for whatever, you know, just as an example.
Well, I know Evan talked to somebody whose name eludes me in the company I didn't know.
Yeah.
He just name dropped, like I knew him, like Kevin. I talked to Kevin. So I didn't see him. He would have spoken up if he was on. But he's got a line on a couple of used buses,
okay.
And not just like one or two. So he's got some ability to decide the best of the lot. So he's working aggressively to get us at least some used buses.
Good.
Hopefully in time to line up with new drivers to steer those.
Okay.
What are we looking at cost-wise for these used buses?
So right now with the retrofits, they're coming in at about $105,000.
Okay. You do know that.
No, that's the used ones. The new ones are coming in at $150.
Is that per bus or for
per bus.
Several buses?
Per bus.
So the new ones are $150 and the used ones are $105.
Assuming that you get a decent one, right. So, I mean, the good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those would be, that would be like a retrofitted price.
And just so you're aware, I know we haven't, we've discussed it maybe a couple of times in the past, but all expenditures over $50,000 need to come to the board for approval prior to executing.
That's why we brought it up. And it's going to cost a pretty penny. And we talked about in the last meeting also, remember, we talked about the fact that we were already in at least $100,000 this year, just in the pulling back of routes and stuff like that.
How long is it to procure the buses? New buses.
We ordered
a new bus. Right?
180 to 300 days.
So basically 6 months and six to 12 months. In other words, if we ordered new buses, could we have them in time for next school year, the start of next school year?
Possibly.
And my other question is, I know that we're looking at some of the current bus companies in Delaware that have overcapacity now or under fewer drivers. The question is, rather than buying buses from them, can we temporarily lease buses from them and pay for our own drivers? Therefore, we're not putting out $105,000 for a used bus. Maybe we put out $10,000 or $15,000 to lease the bus for the remainder of the school year and then purchase newer buses, which may provide us better longer-term value. So something to think about, if that's an option, if we can get cheap rental rates from these companies rather than purchasing them. I'm looking to see how we can fit that into longer-term plans for what we may want to do for newer buses or buses that are more aligned with the kinds of systems that we're purchasing, whether they're propane or natural gas or
right.
Electric or other things. Okay. Can folks hear us online? I know that there's back and forth.
They can hear you. They can apparently they can't hear me.
Yes, we can hear.
Any other questions on the head of school report?
So you said Quidel is testing every week now, is it just every other week?
Quidel tests every other week, except for grades where we have specific, you know, if you see specific spikes. So if we have a spike in one, then you would test those more. But currently we're rotating them every other week.
And we do have the ability to test daily for close contacts so mm-hmm. they can remain in school.
Yes. That's test the stay program that we're a part of.
And on the flip side of that, when students are quarantining, for example, and they have been, some students are still quarantining, I'm guessing as a result of either COVID symptoms or close contacts. I know you talked a little bit about how they're getting in-person instruction and direct instruction to kind of keep them on pace with their peers and their classmates. So how is that working out now? Is it successful? Are we having any troubles with that model of how we're trying to get students on par in terms of learning with their peers while they're out for a week or 2 weeks at a time?
Currently, I don't have any new updates on there being any new struggles as a result of that.
Do folks seem to be satisfied with that way of working with the students and the parents and the teachers and everybody? Is it?
Well, it's very, you know, that particular information, I haven't had anything come to my level that would indicate that we have anything else that's going on. Again, each school approaches it a little bit differently, so it's not the same approach across the district.
No feedback from any of the schools.
I haven't heard anything
positively or negatively in any of the leadership meetings.
No, most of the feedback is has to do right now with what we can do about the transportation issue. That's what I'm receiving feedback on, and that's where most of the feedback comes from these days. Yeah, I mean, we monitor the grade books, and we're not seeing like some sort of like large dip or anything like that happen. And we did do a full audit of all the grade books.
Someone's got their hand raised. I don't know if they want to.
Some public comments.
The Huntley and Bunkley are
Yes, I have a question. With the numbers rising, are they? Are you guys thinking about offering virtual for parents that want to do virtual with their kids, or is it still going to be fully, you know, in person? Continue to be in person.
It's fully in person.
I was just wondering, with the numbers rising all the time, was that going to change in the future, or you're going to continue to keep it the same as the numbers keep getting higher and higher?
Currently at this time, the anticipation is to keep the model the same. We definitely have the capability to flip a switch in a second and go to virtual if we needed to. And we may be actually executing that capability in early January. For a specific reason, but that is something that is not identified as a best practice for Odyssey Charter School.
So, okay, thank you.
Yes.
John, this is Dan Huntley.
Why are we doing questions?
Yeah, so no more questions for Mr. Pappas. We'll move on to budget.
This is Val. It's unclear to me whether Mr. Huntley wants his question read. I'm happy to sort of read it. The two questions are, what is the school's progress on buying more buses to eliminate the use of a bus contract for the next school year? Why are we continuing to support other districts using OCS buses when we are paying a contractor to bus our students?
So what's our plan for buying new buses?
We just...
You look like you couldn't hear. And the other one is, why are we outsourcing bus routes to a third party and fulfilling third party bus routes? Why are we running for red clay while outsourcing to First Student?
Right. So that was what OCS has been doing for the last, I don't know how many years. Currently, since the situation has changed, all we have been doing is pulling back routes, with the ultimate goal being for us to become completely self-sustained. However, that is not the way the school operated prior to COVID. It has operated in this manner for quite some time. So we are currently shifting our model to being completely self-sufficient.
All right, Jeff, you're up.
Good evening, OCS board and members of the community. I go through the monthly report for November 2021. As previously discussed, the preliminary budgeted revenues for FY22 are $37.8 million, and revenues collected to date are $30.6 million, or 81% of the budget. Revenues received during November, the largest chunk was the final local funding distributions that we received from two of the four larger districts that Odyssey feeds students from. Being received during November. We anticipate receiving the rest of the local final either in December or early January, as well as the state final load, which is about 2.8 million or so during January. Expenditures, the preliminary budgeted expenditures are 30.4 million, which includes our contingency requirement. And expenses to date are $13.5 million with encumbrances of about $400,000, representing 46% of the budget. So trending pretty close to where we are in the year, as we're 42% of the way through the fiscal year. Some notes from this month. I mentioned the final distributions from the two of the four larger districts that I feed from. Continuing the conversation started last month, early analysis on our substitute expenses, both in-house and contractual, are trending higher in August through November than preliminarily budgeted. An update in the projections has taken place, but future updates may continue as we approach the creation of the final budget proposal during February and March. Substitutes are covering for PPL, paid parental leave, which the school will receive a portion of the cost from the state, filling long-term medical outages we're seeing with some of the staff, and filling current staff vacancies and daily substitutes to assist when there are teacher outages. Outages related to COVID-19 are being analyzed to submit a reimbursement to the state to recoup some of the costs associated where applicable. Another expense item of note, coding variances between subscriptions, licenses, instructional supplies, and books and publications are resulting in some variances to the budget on individual line items. However, in aggregate, those categories are trending appropriately. Food and food supplies are trending slightly higher than budget. The numbers of meals provided to OCS and Academia Alonzo, who we service as a contractor on a daily basis, are higher than initially budgeted. Thus, there's an offsetting increase to food service revenues that kind of covers the increase to the expenses. To date, about $600,000 of expenses have been coded to federal funds out of the preliminarily budgeted amount of $1.96 million. And similar to last month, the projected year-end cash on hand is $8.1 million, of which $6.7 million is unrestricted, and $1.4 million would be restricted to a carryover of federal grants.
Question for you on the, you talked about how we have additional expenses and salaries as a result of costs for folks going on parental leave and things along those lines. Is that, did I catch that correctly?
So yeah, if there's teachers that are taking the state program of the 12 weeks paid leave, there's a cost associated for getting a substitute there, but we are reimbursed at a percentage of that from the state by the end of the year.
And
it varies by the credentials of the substitute, and it's a per day. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's approximately like $114 per day if it's someone with a bachelor's degree, and it goes down by the different levels of education.
The reason I ask them financial statement kind of show a net decrease in total salary costs.
Mm-hmm.
And so how is the increase in salary costs rolled into that? In other words, you're saying if we have a $270,000 decrease in salaries, on the other hand, you're saying it's costing us more salary wise. I can understand that we would have to pay for substitutes when folks are on leave, so we're doubling the salaries, but wouldn't that be reflected in the overall expenditures for salaries, or is that not captured? Is that not happening in November?
Sure. No, that's taking that into consideration. So that's why in aggregate on the whole, our salaries line is actually trending under budget. But when sort of identifying specifically the line for substitutes, it that one specifically is trending higher. But we are under budget, I believe, primarily on the teacher budget, and because of some of the vacancies that we've been unable to fill as we've gone through the year, and at the director's level and directors / administrative specialist levels, is that we're just trending lighter there. So in aggregate, we are, as you mentioned, under budget on that line item, but I just wanted to bring up one of the specific line items that I'm keeping a close eye on.
And the contracted services, what are examples of those that we're dropping?
So that could be, I don't have the exact, roll up in front of me, but that could be legal, the medical services, OTPT, that could be our consultants.
Does that include folks like Quidel?
No, actually Quidel is subsidized through the state, so we don't actually pay for their services directly. But I could provide sort of a detailed breakdown later for that summarized line, if that would help.
Yeah, we'd probably like to see that. Maybe we can put those on the server or something at some point where we have a breakdown of those roll-ups, or those, particularly the changes.
I have a question.
Sure.
You mentioned that subs are currently filling in for staff vacancies. Do we have many of those?
No, at this point, I think we're down to maybe two or three. I think two or three in both high school science, high school Spanish, maybe one other position. So
high school science was filled.
Yeah. Sorry, and, sorry, go ahead.
I know, but this is going back a little bit.
Right. And just like you said, some of that is sort of dynamic on a day-by-day basis, that there's updates as we go.
Do we not have applicants for those positions, or is the
challenge? It's slow, but steady. I think there's a new special education position that's open now, too.
No, but I'm talking about applicants and being able to fill those vacancies. I mean, we're not seeing enough qualified candidates.
Yeah, why aren't it's taken a really long time.
The stuff like, I guess, the science teacher and the Spanish teacher, those have been open for months. Mm-hmm. We haven't been able to find qualified candidates to fill those.
No.
What's the biggest holdup? Are they not applicants, or are they just not?
Yeah, no applicants.
Any other questions? Jeff? Approve the web report.
How much should we approve the web report?
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion carries.
Thanks.
Do we have a Greek program report?
Yeah.
Good evening. Yes, I'm here. Good evening, board. Good evening to our community. So it has been a very busy period for OCS. Like everybody knows, about 2 weeks ago, OCS held its first academic fair. It was really an amazing and enlightening experience about what is happening in OCS classes, especially for our Greek program. It was a wonderful opportunity for us to share with the community the continuity and cohesion of the Greek program K through 12. It was very interesting to observe how our students' language skills and cultural competence develop over the years from K through 12. Now we're getting ready for our next cultural event, not only for the Greek program, but we participate on that, the winter concert, K through 3rd grade. And this is an opportunity to share and celebrate different cultures and backgrounds with our community. At the same time, we're working on the expansion of the immersion, and we have scheduled meetings to inform our fourth grade families and the community about what is going to all the opportunities that we have in store for our first fifth graders immersion. Also, our collaborations will continue with Pierce College, the collaboration of Athens, our collaboration between their middle school and our middle school. We continue our collaboration with the American Farm School of Thessaloniki. It's the first project that we have for this year, but it's not the first time that we collaborate with them. This year, we're going to work on a project between our third grades, there and ours. And at the same time, we're working on a new collaboration between a public high school of Athens and our high school, but we will have more updates in our next meeting. And that's all from me. Anna Maria, I cannot hear you, sorry.
When is the winter concert scheduled?
20th and 21st of December. K through 3rd.
And where is that?
In intermediate school, I don't know if Stephanie Beckel is with us. Probably she has more information. But it's in the intermediate school. In the morning, we'll have groups of students perform one group after the other.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Ioana? Next up, we have a report for the CBOC. I believe we do. Didn't meet this month. They're going to meet in January. The next up is out of state travel. Strelo received a list for out of state travel for approval. The only comment I had was the list we got was fine. We don't need to include names on the list, just locations and the event itself at this point in time. Do you have any questions or comments about the out of state travel? We have a motion to approve.
I move we approve.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Next up is the annual report. Everybody received a copy of it the other week to review, made some comments and edits to it. I'm assuming that that has been updated with those as well. Did anybody have any additional comments or questions related to the annual school report? We have a motion to pass the annual school report. This needs to be submitted to the state by when?
The end of the month.
The end of the month. Okay.
I move we accept the annual report as written.
Do we have a second? Any comments, discussion points? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries.
Do you want to just sign that copy and then I'll scan it?
I scribbled on it.
Okay, then I'll then we'll just PDF it. We'll
do
it.
I can send you a digital signature.
All right.
That way it's cleaner too. We've done the monthly financial review, correct? CBOC. Next up is committee reports, DE&I, Helen or Eva, do we have any updates on the DE&I committee?
We have a short update. First of all, we would like to welcome Ms. Audrey Bonet and tell her how excited we are to have her with us and looking forward to working with you. I think we have our first meeting already scheduled for the end of this week. And then just a quick update about our food drive. Our outreach committee, which is a branch of our DE&I, had a food drive the same day as the academic fair. I think Nurse Lo is on and she's gonna give us a little bit of more of an extensive report, but every time we are thinking about having a food drive, she and I talk about it and we both go over how busy we are and how, you know, crazy things are. And then we conclude, even if we can help one family, let's do it. And we always end up many more than one family and we could not do it without everybody's help. So I will mention some people that I wrote down that have helped us so much lately. The Daughters of Penelope have donated food time and again to our pantry. They come with truckloads, not truckloads, trunk loads. And we refill, you know, the pantry. The administration donated turkeys. The green team gave us fresh produce. Several board members, am I gonna embarrass you by naming you by name? Maybe not. Okay. And many, many OCS families came out with lots of donations, and we were able to give baskets to many people. We also had a group of middle schoolers who came and helped us, and that was our highlight because these kids were so enthusiastic about everything they did for us and the food drives. So it was a collective effort, and we thank everybody who helped us make it a success. So if Paula is on, I would like her to give us some numbers.
Thank you, Eva. I did want to start just like she was saying, I was very pleased and overwhelmed with the generosity of our OCS family and community, from parents to administrators to the board members. Our families and our teachers delivered a lot of food donations. We had coats donated. We had some money donations, which helped us to buy extra things that we didn't have enough of. We were able to give 13 full turkey dinners to families who had reserved one for their Thanksgiving meal, and at least a couple dozen other families that came to get food to help with their food needs at home. We gave away over 20 brand new coats, new hats and mittens to several families. There were toiletries and all kinds of school supplies, and our families were so grateful that we're able to receive what they needed. Since then, I've had three more families asked to come to the pantry for continued food needs, and I have also had one more person request a delivery for a great need for right now. It warms my heart how generous our Odyssey family is in helping each other out. And like she said, we're very busy. However, it made my heart sing to see so many people participate and be able to receive what was needed. Since the drive, I've also had more requests for coats. We had given away all but two of our brand new coats that we had. Eva generously went shopping and was able to get six more that were requested by families who had a need for a new coat for their kids. And that that was very helpful. We would receive that if anybody wanted to donate to the food pantry at any time. If you have new items like that, that might help our families. It's something that we can continue to offer through the pantry. And also, we're always open to volunteers. If there's any middle school, high school students who need some volunteer hours or generously wanting to help us. We need help to restock our shelves and check expiration dates of the food that's been donated to our pantry. So we'd be grateful for any help or any donations that are brought in. And again, thank you to everybody at Odyssey. I'm very grateful that we're able to offer this service to our families.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
Anything else, Evan? Good. Next up, immersion committee. Anything on the immersion committee?
We are just discussing more about how the fifth grade will be working out next year, and we're going to start having our monthly immersion committee meetings on January 11th at 4:30. I will notice it, so anyone in the community who wants to participate or any teachers, January 11th at 4:30 will be our first immersion committee meeting again, and we'll be talking about growth and our possibilities. So if you want to have input, please join us. It will be on the website.
Will that be like the same day every month?
It will be on the spring, yes, that second Tuesday every month at 4:30.
Thank you, Nori. Next up, fundraising. I know Mr. Pappas talked a little bit about it. Any additional updates?
Yes. So this is Marianne Yaron, and Mr. Pappas did cover quite a bit of it, but fundraising committee, along with Carl, have identified, and the administration has identified a list of projects. and the primary project still remains the gymnasium, how to finish that off, finish the start and finish the gymnasium. It's been suggested that we need to seek updated figures about the gymnasium and put that back on track and restart the capital campaign. So plans are getting made about how to do all of that. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. Thank you. Maybe one of these days we can have Carl come in and kind of give like a brief 10 or 15 minute summary of all the activities. He's working, he's doing a lot across the board, and we're happy to have him on the team. So let's see, maybe we can schedule him to come in as well and brief the board about where we are and where we're going.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea to have him.
Other committees?
I think for the nominating committee, for Thanksgiving, I think we have a chance to meet since the last board meeting, but we will be noticing a meeting for next week, I believe, to meet and review the applicants who applied previously and look at how to move forward for that position.
Thank you, Erin. Am I missing any committees? Did we hit everyone? I don't think we did anything else. Double check it. Thank you. PTO report. We have a PTO report this week.
This month. Hang on. Kaya said she wasn't able to be on, but she did send me a note to share. The turkey trot results will be announced by Friday, and the PTO is going on a break from Friday until January 5th. The spirit wear orders that were done for November will be delivered by Friday, and then the Joe Corby will be picked up on Thursday between 2:30 p.m. and 6 p.m. And that's the PTO report.
Okay. Any new business that we need to discuss?
Go to the school.
That's next. No new business. Anything for the good of the school?
Yes. So I referred to it earlier in the head of schools report, and I referred to the fact that the COVID rates are increasing. So I also spoke to some other school districts to find out some clarification. And there are other schools that are considering this as well, although they would not, they choose not to be on record right now with their plans. And I respect their that, but I also respect them giving me information that we could use to guide us as well. So as a result of the increase in COVID cases, actually COVID cases are greater today in 2021 than they were in 2020 at the same time, despite the fact that we have a large vaccinated population and stuff like that. There are some factors that are clearly different in terms of the type of infections, the subgroups and stuff like that. It's not stuff for me to get into right now, but as just a general precaution, the administration is suggesting that we have some sort of virtual session upon our return after this break for January 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. January 3rd is already an in-service day for teachers. That's been on the calendar for a long, long time. But what we're suggesting is that we need to give time for kind of almost like a cool down period between the holidays. There's a lot of people that are going out of state and they're gathering with families. And that has been an area where there have been increased cases being passed on, is because of family gatherings. Obviously people are not wearing their masks in family gatherings for extended periods of time, so on and so forth. So the suggestion of the school is to go with whether it's a virtual or some sort of week where we're not actually on campus with the students, and allowing testing to occur during that week so that, you know, the families can get tested as they need to, as they're returning from their holiday breaks or whatever they're doing. And we can ensure kind of a clean return the following Monday. This is also something that we did after the spring break last year. And it was quite successful for us in trying as a mitigation strategy. So we wanted to put that up for the good of the school as well. I don't have like the entire strategic plan in place for what this would look like, but generally what we're looking at is having testing on site during that week for families to be able to do as they're returning from breaks. We'd have specific days that they could come test on campus. And the goal is to also have our staff here on campus too.
So the teachers will be in school.
The goal would be, yes, to have the teachers in school. Correct.
What's the what's Quidel's capacity for testing? In other words, when we talk about testing each day throughout the week, what does that look like? Are we looking at an entire school, lower school? Can all get tested one day, intermediate school another day? What kind of volume?
It would probably take the entire week.
So what I'm asking is, what kind of volume capacity do they have to do testing? Can they test 2,000 kids in a week?
Yes.
Can they test 2,000 kids in less than a week?
We haven't seen that yet. We have seen that. We have seen 2,000 or the entire school population a week. We haven't seen in less than a week.
Do we know that if other schools are going to be in the same predicament, do we know that they would prioritize us over others or resource to us to make sure they can get us all tested in that week? Like how will we, it's happened in the past, but how are we sure that this week it would still work?
I couldn't tell you that we're certain of that, but we're also going to allow flexibility for families to be able to test outside of the school as well.
So why can't we do that right before we come back? Why can't we say for two things? Number one, you have to have a negative test return, and you're going to be tested in school that week. That's right out.
Like as in, well, because families don't come back that fast.
Like you. Well, they have to. Here's my concern. Last year, you're right. But last year, teachers were all, can you guys hear me? Sorry. Kids and teachers were all very much in the sort of rhythm of ACing for online or virtual. This year, kindergartners had never been virtual. And even kids who were here last year have been virtual since maybe April, some maybe a little bit later, but it's been such a long time. I struggle to think of how there will be any real education done that week with reminding the younger half to mute and unmute, and the older half to turn their cameras on and log on here and look at that. My kids haven't even brought home their tablets once this year. So I just think I'm really concerned about the capability of actually teaching that week if we switch to this.
Yeah, I would be concerned with that capability as well. But obviously my number one concern is the safety of the school. And I don't believe that we would be able to bring everybody back to campus on January 4th. And you'd have a lot of people out there.
One of the numbers we talk about, there are increases in COVID numbers. Does that affect our demographic significantly? In other words, where are these numbers? What age groups? What populations? What demographics? In other words, if it's not in our demographic group, is it a risk to the school?
We have 32% increase in the last. I mean, we've had 32% of our total cases in the last month. I don't know the 32%. I don't have that breakdown yet. This data is just coming to me now. We have it by school. It's on the report by school. I don't have it by like what grade level right now in front of me. No, I don't have that information in front of me right now. But Brittany can get it for us.
I guess the thing is, does the team feel that would be a productive week, even if it was virtual?
I don't know, are we asking?
The bigger concern would be, we have about 3 or 4 families who have been thinking about working with children back. If we tell families now that our expectations for their children is not going to be a negative result, then I feel like that's more than enough time than adding start by saying, now we need you to find child care for another child care. It's one thing, like you said, the term has been on the calendar, but it's a whole other thing we're adding an additional 4 days for families to take on that. or requiring a negative vote to return back to people.
I'm sorry, but we cannot hear you at all.
We cannot require anybody to pass. There's no state of emergency. You cannot require a test to come back.
I'm not saying, but that's what we're asking for. We want negative COVID results, right? So if negative COVID results are what you're asking for this week of virtual report, then what's the difference of asking for that to return back to campus? Because either the families are going to do it or they're not. And so we test if they're going to come on campus, we can test them in. On the fourth, they can test on the third, they can test on the fourth, or whatever day they go back. I don't think adding a virtual option for that week at this juncture is best practices for honesty and for the families that are going to be impacted.
Because it ensures that you're going to have a week. That's why it's important. It ensures medically that you're going to have a week. I don't think there's anything more important than ensuring medically that, irrespective of whether, because we cannot force test, we can't force them to do it. And currently in our ask mode, we're at 75%. So if we know that 25% of the kids could possibly come in here at some sort of infection level, why wouldn't we allow for the cooling off period to be in place so that we can ensure the safety of the families?
Why aren't we requiring the 25% to get tested?
Because you're not allowed to do that. There's no state of emergency.
I don't know. Do we need a state of emergency?
Yes, you do.
State of emergency still?
We are not in a state of emergency.
We're not in a state of emergency, but we can still request the information to be provided as we want. We've never been able to require.
We cannot require.
We've never been able to require families to provide the information. So we have a better shot of having more families return back with it than to say, let's just give you this cooling off. Because last month when I asked about COVID and what was our plan, you said, we have something all ready to go as if it can happen. If we have testing available, then let's test those that want to be tested. If we have families that choose to not provide it, then we have to have a better plan, another plan. But we can't just say let's give an additional week to just everybody stay home and let's figure out, hopefully we won't come back in here with COVID. Because it's only going to continue on. I mean, it's the winter time. You know what's happening. It's what we see a spike. We're going to continue to see that.
Okay. I mean, I'm just going to respectfully disagree. I think it's very important for you to follow the science. And the science says that if you provide this time off, you're basically doing the quarantine. And that's what I'm proposing.
I don't think anyone here is saying that science doesn't suggest that some sort of quarantine is helpful. I think what people are suggesting is there are other factors at play. There are kids who don't have parents who can take time off. There are kids who don't have food at home. There are kids who don't have good electricity. I don't know that we're planning to pass out Wi-Fi hotspots like we did last year. It's a different scenario than last year. And I think what people are just suggesting is, can we think about, have we looked at every single thing that we could possibly do? Like, what is the percentage of kids who have a single vaccination dose? Do we know that? Is it decent? Like, if we have 75% who are willing to test and we have a decent chunk who are vaccinated or at least have one dose and theoretically will have two by then, where does that put us in that like sector that's not covered?
I wouldn't care to comment on that because I'm not a medical professional. That's not an area where I can use.
I'm not asking you to make a medical judgment. I'm asking, what are the numbers of kids who have had at least one dose? I mean, I reported to nurses. I'm assuming a lot of other people did. Do we have that? Is it on the dashboard?
I don't have access to that information.
Are we not asking for information for folks to volunteer their vaccination?
Yes,
status?
We have been.
And are they doing that? Have we been repeatedly asking them sufficiently so that they could actually make that, provide that input? Yeah, and that's maybe my last spot, but I do think the conditions are a little different. Obviously, all of us, we do have concerns about the safety and well-being of all the students and all the faculty and everybody here at the school. But I guess we're struggling a little bit with whether or not closing the school for a week and the impact that has on the learning process. And we've seen that it does make for difficult circumstances when we do that for the students particularly. and their learning abilities, and never, notwithstanding students that have never taken it, that have never done online learning, absent having some real numbers to understand the at-risk demographics in these current spikes, and understanding what our population looks like in terms of vaccination, since it has opened up for kids under 12 and under. Can we make a push to understand that information? We do have a board meeting next week if we need to make an alternate decision. So we do have something on the books. It was an accidental posting, but it's there, so we'll be able to meet next week if we need to.
But I think that's even less notice for families if they're going to have to stay home.
And I think that's the biggest thing too, the impact that it has to families as well, in terms of trying to get coverage for students that are going to be at home.
Could we perhaps let the nurses weigh on the situation? Would anybody like to contribute to this? Any of the nurses?
Yeah, and we're not looking for anybody to contradict anybody. What we're trying to understand is the information and the data with respect to rises in cases.
So I'm on here. I have like a mixed bag of answers. To be honest, I think there's a lot to be said for vaccination status. As far as pulling that data, it is not easy. It is a manual search, and none of the nurses' duties have been taken away. If anything, we've doubled our workload at this point. So I, in all sincerity, don't know how quickly we can get that data to you. I'm being completely honest. It is a manual search, child by child, on their DTH record. And if the card has not been submitted, we cannot access it. So it sounds easy in context, but it is really not. That's number one. Number two, I just think our cases are actively rising. Personally, I would like to see where the cases go in like the next week. This week, we are like battling down the hatches. We are seeing high rises in the intermediate school and the middle school. Are we saying that those cases are connected? Not at this point. But I think that's a piece of it too. That's a high population that is currently not vaccinated. So I think that is weighing in on this also. Again, we're just trying to really push the mitigation strategies, vaccination, mask wearing, good hand hygiene. Those are all the important things. I think unfortunately as a society, we've kind of leaned away from some of those. I don't know if those are the answers you're looking for. That's kind of where I am. I apologize. I'm in my car. I'm a mom too, and I'm sitting outside of the.
Thank you, Brittany.
Any other questions or comments from anybody on the subject? Does anybody have a motion that they want to propose?
Should we perhaps revisit this next week, wait and see, and maybe have a quick meeting next week to decide?
I guess I'd like to ask a general question, and maybe Brittany knows the answer, but of the students that were, let's say, over 12 that were vaccination eligible up until the recent opening, what do we have an indication of what the percentages were of their vaccination status, at least those that reported? Ballpark numbers, I guess, would be sufficient.
Honestly, no, we do not. Again, like we're like a four-person show here. Each nurse is managing their own billing. They're doing all their contact tracing, and they're managing that workflow of the traditional child at Odyssey Charter School. While last year we were running at half capacity, so you have to think instead of managing 2,000 children, we were managing 1,000. So the workload right now is like it's very hard to put into words how truly busy it is. And then the test to stay program is being run by the state, but the nurses are doing all the review daily of those test results. The test to stay in of itself has added, I'd say, like 2 to 4 hours of workload per day. It's a lot. So then vaccination status, if we wanted to have like a person that was going to do numbers and grind that, maybe we could get that out by next week. But me as a person, like, I don't know that I physically have any more hours in the day.
Hey, Brandy, the last thing you want to do is put anything else on your shoulders, honestly. Is there any value in doing a family survey asking vaccination status? What's your thoughts on the accuracy that we would get from that?
I would really hope that people were going to be honest and accurate. And honestly, that may give you like your easiest estimate numbers. I've looked at high school, but as far as like that 5 to 11-year-old population that just met the criteria to meet the two shots, that data is being updated daily. But I think even if we asked, do you have an appointment for your second dose before January 1, that would give us a better idea, or even December 30th. Because remember, you get that second shot and then you need 2 weeks until you're considered fully vaccinated.
I'd also like to caution that we would have to make sure any kind of survey is done would have a way for it to be completely confidential. This is medical information. So I would just want to caution that piece as well.
I'm just thinking if we're thinking about pushing the vote to Monday,
more information.
What value can we add? And if we,
I think it shouldn't. It would be anonymous. Like, are you what school are you in?
What school? What grade?
What school? What grade? And like, have you done this by the state?
Yo,
It would be good to understand it if we had it in the context of understanding where the older children are with vaccination rates and how often we get outbreaks, because the reality is, according to statistics, 40% of parents say, I'm not getting my child 5 to 12 years old vaccinated. They're not going to do it. Another 20 or 30% are saying, I'm only going to do it if I'm mandated. So only less than 50% of parents will vaccinate their kids from 5 to 12 years old. Now, if we have a vaccination rate of roughly 50% of students over 12 years old, and the outbreaks are significantly low in those age groups, then that would provide us some data that would potentially say, well, if half the students in the lower grades are vaccinated also, that helps significantly with reducing or mitigating outbreaks. Now, that would be a guess, right? We'd be speculating, but those are the only data points that we can really relate to if we're looking at something like this, particularly with data coming back that says large populations of those students are not going to be vaccinated. But it would be good to know, do we have 30 or 40% vaccination rates in our schools? Or grade of vaccination status, that's even more. I would like to have some data too with respect to demographics of current COVID case spikes, particularly in Delaware and Newcastle County. And where are those cases spiking? Are they spiking in kids? Are they spiking in people over 60? I don't know.
Delaware State COVID site provides demographic information for current outbreaks.
It's easy enough to pull that or get some idea.
So could we put out a survey tomorrow and ask for Friday so that we just get the data done? Is that possible?
We could try.
Super simple, just age or grade.
It's just you're not guaranteed you're going to get the response rate that you're
right,
looking
for. Right, but we're making it. It's an imperfect scenario, you know. Like, we're not going to know for sure what's going to happen either way. So at least if we get a little bit more information.
We should do it too as well.
Yeah.
And in all fairness, for the people who complain either way with whatever decision, at least we try. We're trying to get data.
We're not making a rash.
Nor are we just sitting here on our hands for a week and making them wonder whether or not they're going to have school. But can we also let them know that the possibility is there that first week may be virtual in the event they need to make plans now?
That'd be a good message. We have a survey, like, make this decision. Here's a survey.
When we talk virtual, though, are we talking real virtual, or are we talking asynchronous learning?
Well, that's a good question. So in responding to access to equitable resources, the better practice is to do asynchronous instruction, at which point we would load the assignments and or whatever it is they're going to do before they go on break. That way the families would be able to take it home with them, and the students would be able to complete their assignments irrespective of whether they have access to technology or not. This would be the most equitable way for us to be able to move forward with any sort of virtual model. It is precisely the fact that the virtual model will increase the amount of burden on families that makes it so difficult for us to pivot on, unless we're in a state of crisis, right? If we're in a state of crisis, then we'll do what we have to do. We'll get used to it again and we'll do it. But in the meantime, we in an asynchronous model, you wouldn't have that issue, because you'd be able to do something like having, here's the assignments, whatever it is, they're uploaded into Schoology, and then you have something like an office hour, you know, where you can have that time, that FaceTime with the teacher within the day, in order for you to provide those support services. That, especially in the lower grades, is a lot easier model to follow than trying to prop them up in front of a computer for 4 hours at a time, asking them to go from one teacher to another.
And how quickly do you know, how much time do you need to prepare the asynchronous lessons to load them up into school?
Well, fortunately, because we are talking about it today, we have a decent amount of turnaround time, right? Because we're off on the 22nd. So I am confident that our staff and our teachers would be able to do that in a decent amount of time, should we have the information that we need in a relatively, you know, expedited fashion. So I think that's a very valid point.
Information or decision by the 20th isn't going to be very helpful. That's what you're saying.
The 20th is going to be a little bit of a push.
Since everyone will be on the case.
But does it require a board meeting to do it?
If we're going to approve closing the school, it will.
I don't think it's closing the school, though. Can we?
We will be changing the calendar for families.
I'm not sure that the 20th will help them for that.
And just so that I'm clear, you're saying that every educator will have access to sit home with the children who do not have internet at home and they don't have that. And how are we identifying this? I want to make sure I'm not missing. So if a student does not have the internet at home and they're not getting to school, are you telling me that their educator will have packets of work to send home with them on that day?
That's the proposal for the asynchronous one, yes.
Could we be in person with the option for families to do that if they didn't feel comfortable? Have the packets ready? Families who didn't feel comfortable or weren't able to test, they keep the packets at home, and families who wanted to be in person could come in person with a strong emphasis on testing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can, sure. I think that they'll probably get further ahead, honestly, if they're in person. We're gonna
totally, I'm just saying,
right,
concerned, and we think that that week poses, and I understand why, it's a larger risk than normal, but there are families, whether there's electricity or not, for whom this would be really, really, really hard for the kids, for the parents, beyond can they complete a packet, can they get food, are they being supervised, do their parents have to take unexcused leave, and there are a lot of, I'm just wondering if we can create a more flexible solution for that week that sort of lets people go whichever way they feel more comfortable.
I'm not sure that I have an answer for that right now. I mean, it's
kind of hard to vote without having a lot of structure around what we're asking for.
Well, I guess the question is, you're talking about having Quidel on campus that week, and you have tons of people basically now bringing their students onto campus to be tested. My question previously was about the volume of that test. And the reality is, it's like, if we're going to have school open and kids come in, and hey, do we stagger the opening somehow? And we're testing kids as they come in. I mean, I don't know how long it takes them to validate the results, find people, and quarantine people or people that are positive. I mean, it's you know, it complicates it, but I'm just trying to figure out how can we do that closer to real time as opposed to let's wait a week. And that's why I know there were suggestions about getting folks pre-tested. Right? What percentage of folks are going to actually take the tests? They come in. If the percentage is low, half the kids, half the students, half the population, I don't know what that number is. I think the people that are going to get want to get tested are going to get tested. The others just won't, may not bother with it. So the question is, can we get those numbers and that information by the second or the third, regardless? And anybody else that wants to test that couldn't test, but do a test when they report to school that day, potentially, and get a result within a short period of time, is that reasonable? I guess you guys have to answer whether or not that's feasible or reasonable to do that, and how that would work, and what the logistics of that would look like. You guys explore a plan like that?
Yeah, we can possibly take a look at a plan like that, but I think that the purpose of what we're proposing is not, it's because it will allow us the week, because that's a research-based practice, because that has been done in the past successfully. That is why we're doing it. Bogging down specifically on the how we're going to look on the specific days is not as important as the underlying piece, which was to provide that cooling off period. So if it is the opinion of OCS that the cooling off period is not the reason why we should do it, then we don't do it. We just bring everybody back on the fourth. And we wouldn't be the only ones that came to that conclusion.
What conclusion is that?
That we should come back right away. Like there are schools that are doing that.
My understanding is that there are, last I checked, there were very few, if any, schools that were proposing not coming back. And maybe, like you said, they're not willing to go public with it, but publicly, I don't think anybody or that I'm aware of has stated we're not coming back in class after winter break.
No, they haven't. They haven't spoken of it publicly.
Recording in progress. So I guess based on discussions, we're not going to make any motion or movement on that at this point in time.
I think the survey is important enough.
So you guys can get a survey out tomorrow, potentially get data back as possible, even by Thursday or Friday. So at least by Thursday, maybe, this week, we can get it taken care of or crunched this week and have the information down and go from there.
Generally, I think about construction time has been lost already. unless the administrative case panel supports putting any more in-person instruction time. The outbreak in the schools is quite low.
Okay. All right, so there'll be no, I guess there'll be no motion on that this evening. Anything else from the good of the school at this point?
Nope. Okay.
That concludes everything else. I believe we're going to go into exec session. Discuss a few items after this. So this concludes the public session until we adjourn. So I want to thank everybody for dialing in. We're going to move into exec session in a few minutes. We have a motion to go to executive session. We have a second.
Awesome.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so we'll be moving into executive session.
And we're back.
And we're back in public session. It's 9:42 p.m. We have a motion to adjourn.
Evan, can you raise your hand so that we know you can hear us?
First one.
Thank you. Thank you. I move we adjourn.
A second.
Aye.
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 Opposed? The meeting adjourned 9:42.